from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about a pianist who's being brought in by the American Pianists Association and the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra for three concerts.
I'll take a look at a new exhibit at the State Museum that looks at the science of skateboarding.
And I'll learn about the new season of the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The American Pianists Association and the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra are partnering to bring award-winning pianist Garrick Olson to Indianapolis three times over the coming season. Sharon Gamble invited APA and ISO leaders Joel Harrison and Gary Gensling to our studios to learn more.
So, Garrick Olson, Mr. Chopin, how did this partnership get started? Who started this? Which of you went to the other and said, hey, we could do this?
Well, I think it was my idea. You know, Garrick's a pianist. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great to have one of these major artists come and sort of be artist in residence in the city of Indianapolis? And wouldn't it be great for all of the concert goers in the city to hear Garrick or whoever the artist happened to be, you know, in a variety of musical genres, not, you know, solo, chamber music, and concerto. And so Gary thought that was a good idea. Garrick thought it was a good idea. And here we go. We're going to try it out and see if it works.
And if it works, it might be the first of an annual event.
Might be.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the ISO's experience with Garrick Olson as a soloist before?
Certainly. He comes regularly to town to play with us. And we're excited this coming season where he'll be performing the Szymanowski Symphony No. 4, which is actually a concerto for piano and orchestra, so a lesser known work. You know, he's played some of the great standard concertos with us, and this will be a chance to hear him with our music director Urbanski in a lesser known work. And as Joel mentioned, combining that with a chance to hear him play a solo recital and then chamber music as well, it's really a wonderful opportunity for our community to hear many different sides of this amazing artist.
So in addition, and we're going to circle back and talk more about repertoire in just a moment, but in addition to being able to hear him in three different settings, in a solo concert, in a chamber music concert, and then with full orchestra, will there be opportunities to hear him speak or some other context? And are you reaching out to students?
On our series, the Grand Encounter series of the American Pianist Association, part of that is creating a situation where the major artist does spend time with a select number of students. So for Garrick's November the 1st solo recital, there will be that opportunity.
Is it a full-blown master class then?
It is not a master class. It's, I guess one would call it a meet and greet, where the kids, you know, they get introduced to him and he chats with them, talks about his career and things like that.
Joel, do you remember when you first became aware of Garrick Olson?
Oh, dear.
I'm taking you back a few years,
no.
I think.
I don't.
He's in his 60s now, but he still seems like a rising young pianist in many ways. I mean, he's got a ton of energy.
Yes, he does. He maintains a pretty hefty schedule. We are, in fact, going to be together. I'm going to Warsaw, Poland in October for the International Chopin Piano Competition, and Garrick is on the jury for that. And, you know, he was one of the, I think maybe the first winner, or a winner at any rate.
Right.
Some while
very
ago.
Early in his career.
Yeah.
Perfect. And Gary, you're not a pianist. You have a wind instrument in your background. Are you remember
I do.
That?
I'm a clarinet.
Clarinet, not
a pianist.
Okay.
And I also can't remember the first time I heard Garrick, but you know have known so many of his recordings and for listened to him for so many years. I mean, I think it's fair to say, Joel, you probably agree with me. He certainly is one of the preeminent pianists of our time, and we're really just so fortunate that he's agreed to spend multiple visits in Indianapolis
this
season. Yeah,
he's going to get to know us well as vice versa.
Yeah.
And you know, he is kind of synonymous as any contemporary pianist can be with Chopin, but he has an extraordinarily broad range, right?
He does, a great deal of power, you know, highly expressive pianist, but of course the association with Chopin since he won the Chopin competition,
right,
you know, still holds.
And doesn't he have an extraordinarily broad reach in his hands?
I presume he does. He's a big man, but I've never tested.
Yeah. We'll ask again in a year after these three performances, right? I think I read that he can reach a 12th in his left hand and 11 notes in his right hand,
yeah,
which
wow.
I'm holding my own hands out for illustration, which our listeners can't see, but try it yourself if you're not driving. So the solo concert, what do we know about the repertoire?
We know nothing.
We'll know when it gets closer to November 1st.
Yes. The agency that manages him has promised the program in early autumn. But so far, no luck.
What do we hope for? What would you like to hear him perform solo?
I would love to hear a varied program. Perhaps some somewhat lesser-known work, such as he's playing this lesser-known, which I've never heard.
This Szymanowski.
Yeah,
I was poking around a little bit because I feel like the ISO maybe has never programmed that work. Is that possible?
I'm not sure, but if we have, it certainly hasn't appeared frequently.
Yeah.
On
no.
Programs.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard it live. But anyway, I think it'd be great if he could play more works like that,
mm-hmm,
and bring them to the public. My guess is he'll also play Chopin as well, but I don't know.
So I'm guessing that we maybe don't then yet know the chamber music works that will be on the March program.
Well, we know a little bit. You know, I'll say that one of the things we're particularly excited about in this initiative with the American Pianist Association is this chamber program. It'll be a really great opportunity for Garrick to play with members of the ISO to play,
mm-hmm,
chamber music. So this is something that doesn't get to happen too often for our musicians, and so I think it's a real treat for them to have a chance to come together with an artist like Garrick. And so we know that the program will include some Beethoven chamber music and as well as the Brahms piano quintet on the second half. So definitely it will be a highlight for sure for me.
Now, many local music goers know that there are a number of ensembles who their day job is playing with the ISO, but some string quartets, some mixed wind and strings like the Ronen Chamber Ensemble. Are you at liberty to say who the performers who will be with Mr. Olson will be yet?
Not yet, but
we'll
announce that when we've sorted out all the details.
Yeah, okay, cool. So there's a special kind of special discount package that you guys have come up with so people can hear all three of these concerts. And I should mention that the first two are at Indiana Landmarks Center, which has a piano that you chose.
Yeah,
you
I
and
did.
Spencer Meyer chose.
Spencer Meyer, one of our classical fellows, 2006 classical fellow, joined us out at the Steinway Factory on Long Island, Queens, and got to try out a number of their concert instruments and chose one.
How many were on the showroom floor that you could try at the time?
Typically, when you go, there'll be five or six.
Okay.
Of the 9-foot grands,
mm-hmm,
and you know, as a rule, they're all excellent. It's just that, you know, the kind of piano you might choose for the ISO with Hilbert Circle Theater would be one kind of instrument, and the kind of instrument you might use for a smaller hall such as Landmark Center would be, you know, voiced slightly differently.
And I know we're taking a little side trip here, but can you articulate for us how you hold that in your head, how a certain instrument might sound in a particular hall? How can you do that?
Yeah. One, you've played a lot of pianos over your life, so you start to have some sense of that. You never really know until the instrument is in the space, just like anything else. It depends on the acoustic of the room. Beyond that, there are certain things that I look for, and I think we know. One is what I call the singing quality of the instrument. It's hard to describe what that is, but I know what it is when I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
The other would be how long the decay is. You know, you play the note, how long does it last before it's no longer around? And I won't go into detail about how we test that, but that has a lot to say about the quality of the instrument and how well it will function in a concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I would add is, and I'm sure, Joel, you would agree with me, is the other element that makes a huge impact is the particular artist also. So our pianos will sound very different depending on which artist is playing them in the same hall. So of course that has a big contributor to the sound and the oral experience that you get from a particular instrument.
Of course. What did Spencer play in the process? And I assume it's apples to apples, so he would play a passage of Bach, a passage of Beethoven, or whatever. On each of the candidates, right?
Yeah, actually, initially, we don't play repertoire. We just play different kinds of sounds, trying to create, you know, a chord or single notes. Check out the damper pedal, the una corda, the sostenuto pedal, things like that. Check out the different registers to see if the piano sounds like the same instrument, you know, from bass to treble. Then start in on some repertoire, and usually, you know, try something that's rather quiet, something that's very lyrical, something that's very big, you know, just so you get to experience and hear the different kinds of sounds that are a part of the great repertory of the piano.
How much, when Garrick Olson comes, how much rehearsal time will he have with the instrument he's going to be playing for his solo concert?
Well, you know, I don't remember. It's in the contract. You should know that, Sharon.
Referencing that at my day job, I work at Indiana Landmark Center. Yeah, I don't get it that level of detail.
I believe that he has the hall. That's a Sunday morning. I believe he has the hall that Sunday morning to try out the instrument.
Which means that he'll have a little bit of a head start when he comes back to play it with ISO musicians in the chamber music concert.
Right.
And then we haven't talked about this on the air for a while, Gary. How long, when the ISO performs with a soloist, does that soloist come in midweek? Are there two full rehearsals? Or
again, it really depends on the repertoire and on the soloist schedule. And so, and I'm not sure if we finalize the schedule for Garrick's week with us, which is at the very end of our season next season. But an unfamiliar piece like the Szymanowski, it's my guess that he would probably have two rehearsals with the orchestra. And Christoph might spend some time with the orchestra on the piece ahead of time before Garrick arrives. But, yeah, some soloists will come in and just do one dress rehearsal with the orchestra on sometimes even on the morning of the first performance and perform. So it really just depends on the repertoire and schedules.
Yeah.
In this case, he'll probably also work independently with Christoph, you know, in the conductor's suite, just going through things with the piano.
Sure, they'll always spend time together with the conductor and soloist ahead of time to make sure that they have a common understanding of the approach to the particular work.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. So I wish you the best of luck in this partnership.
Thanks so much.
Is exciting, and
ISO's the greatest partner one could have. Gary is terrific. We just did the jazz competition finals there, and of course now coming up not too far in the future, the classical finals, and it's a real joy for us.
And we say the same about Joel and APA, and we should say we've so enjoyed this partnership that you mentioned briefly earlier, Sharon, that we wanted to put a special offer together for the public to have a chance to hear these three different sides of Garrick. So until September 30th, we're offering basically three concerts for the price of two. That's $80 for the solo recital, the chamber concert, and the concerto with the ISO, and a great opportunity for the community to take advantage of that and hear Garrick Olson.
And stay tuned. We'll tell you how you can take advantage of that.
It's a great offer. My goodness.
Sharon Gamble with the ISO's Gary Ginslin and the APA's Joel Harrison. Garrick Olson will play a solo concert on November 1st at the Indiana Landmark Center, a chamber music concert with ISO musicians on March 20th, also at the Indiana Landmark Center, and a concert with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra on June 4th at Hilbert Circle Theater. can get a special ticket package, all three concerts for $80 at IndianapolisSymphony.org, or you can call 317-639-4300. Again, IndianapolisSymphony.org or 639-4300. That special, which is essentially a buy two get one free deal, is available only through September 30th. IndianapolisSymphony.org or 639-4300.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Hey, what does it take to pull off a mid-air 900 on a skateboard? What surface makes for the best ride? What does science have to do with any of it? Beginning Saturday, September 5th, you can jump into the physics behind extreme sports as Indianapolis plays host to the immensely popular, vividly imagined blockbuster exhibition Rad Science, Skate Park Physics. Travis DiNicola spoke with Tracy Cromwell, Director of Collections, and Rebecca Smith, Director of Education, about the exhibit.
Tracy, Rebecca, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. Great to have you. This is going to be such a fun talk because it sounds like such a cool exhibit. Rad Science at the State Museum. It's a skate park physics. It's the science of skating, sponsored by Purdue, which is, I think, very cool. How did you guys end up deciding to bring this exhibit to the State Museum?
Well, we really wanted something fun with a lot of interactives to engage kids of all ages. Skateboarding is still so popular, mm-hmm. even here in Indiana. And with a physics element, it's great to work with the school classes here in the state as well and get their teachers to bring them to see this fun, exciting exhibit.
Sure. So you were you kind of like actively looking for a science, sort of a STEM type of experience that could connect with kids and came up with this? Or?
Sure. Some of our best exhibits that we get at the Indiana State Museum out of traveling exhibits relate to science. People really connect to those well.
Mm-hmm. Who originally put this exhibit together?
It's Exhibit IQ out mm-hmm. of Las Vegas.
Okay.
And they have several exhibits that travel, but this one, we are the last venue for it as of now. So
very neat. Yeah. Well, and so people want to know when it's going to be. And so the official opening is on the 5th of September, but
correct.
The big party is actually going to be on the 12th. And that's when you guys are actually building a skateboard park at the State Museum.
We are.
So people are going to be like skating up and down the stairs
yeah.
in the elevators.
Well,
and
no, we hope not for them.
No.
Okay. It's going to be outside of the building,
okay,
in front of the building, from 9 until 2 that day. So from 9 until 11:30, people are going to be able to learn how to skateboard. So if you're a beginner or mm-hmm. intermediate and want to learn a couple new tricks, we'll have instructors because, let's face it, it's not going to be me instructing. I've been on a skateboard a couple of times, and it doesn't end well. and then from 11:30 until 2, it'll be a free skate. So we hope
that's
that
really
people...
Cool.
It's going to be really cool.
And so, again, that's on the 12th.
Correct.
And so, I mean, so how big is the skateboard park that you guys are building outside, not in the State Museum?
But... So there are it's actually coming from a company called Sequence Sports.
Mm-hmm.
And he can set it up and tear it down. So there's a mini ramp. There's a bunch of bank ramps. And then there is something called a transitional pyramid. So I'm this all sounds like Greek to me, but I've seen pictures of it and it looks really cool. And it's all things that skateboarders will be able
sure.
to interact with. So it's pretty substantial. It's going to take up our front drive.
Okay.
So it'll be on pavement. And then we'll have some other family-friendly activities going on that day. Purdue is going to be involved. We have... extra activities that the museum is planning. We'll have a DJ that day. And then the exhibit will be open, too. So we hope people will take some time to go inside the building to explore the museum and Rad Science.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to talk about the exhibit in just a minute, but I'm still sort of stuck on the skate park. Okay,
I don't blame you.
So, yeah, I mean, because I mean, this is pretty cool. So a couple of things. There is a fee for the open skate, $7 for members, $15 for non-members. I'm guessing people have to wear helmets and sign waivers and all that sort of stuff, right?
Exactly. You must wear a helmet. So, and for people who are under 18, if a parent or guardian signs their waiver, they're allowed to skate. So
okay.
they'll be able to get in and out. Now, if people want to just come to watch others skate.
Yeah.
That's totally fine, and they don't need to have a waiver for that. But if they're going to skate in the park, they have to wear protective gear, mainly a helmet.
Okay. And then people are bringing their own skateboards for the open skate, but will there be skateboards available?
We will have some, but it would be better if they can learn how to skate on their own boards.
Sure.
Yeah, but we'll have some there. And we're also planning right now to have a couple of vendors there as well. So there may be opportunity to purchase gear if they don't come with it.
Nice. That sounds very cool. That's just going to be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, and, I think so too.
You know, and definitely worth checking out. It'll be great for people just to watch and see, you know, kids and adults out there on their skateboards.
Right.
Skating in front of the State Museum. Okay. So let's talk about the actual exhibit. So Tracy, you're the director of collections.
Yep.
And it sounds like, I mean, you're kind of the person who brought this in. Is that correct?
Another person on the team brought this exhibit in when he saw it in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm project managing the exhibit till it opens.
Excellent.
So
okay.
It's a great exhibit. We hope multi-generational families will come and see this.
Mm-hmm.
People my age who grew up with skateboarding in the 80s now have kids.
Right.
Who are totally into skateboarding, too. It's stayed alive that long. It had a little dip in popularity there in the 90s and the early 2000s, but now it's back again. So we're hoping that those families will come. The moms and dads will remember skateboarding.
Well, I know there was a really cool commercial a couple years ago with Tony Hawk, who's, you know, considered one of the best skaters in the world. And I realized that he had like 8 kids or something or
uh-huh.
something crazy. I'm like, wow, I feel really old right now. But yeah. But I mean, certainly, I mean, the people who were skating a lot in the 70s and 80s and you know, have kids now who are skating.
Yes. And a lot of the things in the exhibit are mainly for children to mm-hmm. do and experience that science element too. Skateboarding and how you can flip your skateboard and land on it safely, and it's really going to be fun for those kids to come and go, wow, that's neat.
I have to think that for a lot of skaters, that, you know, they inherently know the physics of it because that's what they do all the
time. Yeah, they do.
But they may not be able to intellectualize it or may not even think of it in terms of physics or science. And I would think that this would have a lot of appeal to skaters as well who, you know exactly the physicality of flipping the board but may not the physics of it or what have you.
I think it's been pretty amazing. Some of the people we've been working with have really had a great response about the physics side of it and really explaining to us how and why it works.
Mm-hmm. How centripetal force actually keeps you on the board when you go upside down on the board. I mean, that's things that I think skateboarders just learn how to do with their bodies and with their core, but they don't realize that it's acts of physics that help them stay put and not get hurt.
Well, I also have to wonder if by understanding it in a different way for existing skaters that it, you know, may actually help them improve their skating because all of a sudden they're you know, because I'm looking at the description of some of the exhibits such as, you know, like Friction Hill, and you can, you know, look at you know, what different surfaces provide the best ride or the bodacious board balance, you know, to test your balance on, you know, on and doing different tricks and stuff that could actually help improve them in their actual skating.
Yeah, most definitely. It's very interactive. Stand on, slide down, spin around, jump on trampolines. Lots of fun things, including skateboarding video games to play.
Yeah.
So I think, again, it's
going to
appeal.
No actual skating inside the museum.
No. Okay. No.
As I mean, cool as that would be.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And there's a possibility of having a demonstration, but we're not going to ask the public to skate inside.
Okay. So is there, like, a swimming pool as part of the exhibit? Is that?
Yeah, it's called Newton's Pool.
Okay. Because I mean, empty swimming pools are where a lot of skaters, you know, learn a lot of their cool moves.
Right. And this is the area that talks about Newton's theory of relativity to skating tricks and, of course, using that used pool, empty pool, as a way that skaters can relate to all of these physics that are involved in the tricks they do.
Wow.
It looks really cool in person, it does.
I bet. Tell me about some of the other elements of the exhibit. There's the Vert Theater.
Yes. That's the introduction,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a vertical ramp that skateboarders would use, but it also has a cool video playing to introduce everybody to skateboarding and show some of the tricks and some of the stars of skateboarding. There's weight versus mass, that you can weigh yourself and see how much you would weigh on all the planets of the solar system and
wow.
how your mass doesn't change from one planet to the next.
So skating on Mars would be a little bit different.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
But again, it's just really fun, cool things to engage people while they're there and learning something along the way.
And there's a wipeout ambulance?
Yeah, we talk about how skateboarding can be pretty dangerous and a lot of people get concussions. So that's something that Purdue is working on, and we hope to include them in that discussion as well.
Very cool. And the need certainly for helmets and pads and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, most definitely.
Because you are going to wipe out. That's part of skating.
Yeah, and when you're a small child, a lot of bad things can happen. As an adult, you might break a hip.
Even worse things can happen.
That doesn't sound good at all. And then there's also some of the history of skating. I mean, looking at early skateboards and sort of how skateboards have changed through the ages and you know, big decks and small decks and long ones and the wheels. I mean, there's a lot of technology that goes into skating, too.
Most certainly, all the way up to hoverboards that are the future of skateboarding. And it's gotten really popular in the last few weeks with Lexus coming out with their hoverboard version that's getting a lot of play on the internet. So
right.
it starts way back as skateboarding began and explains all the changes and how popular it was through the decades and the different types of boards. You can see and touch all the boards throughout history and a couple of stars along the way of skateboarding to see as well.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So I want to go back to this bodacious board balance.
Because you just this, like saying it.
I do. I do like saying
it's
the bodacious board balance.
Yeah.
So now, have either of you actually had a chance to try this out? Because my understanding of it is basically it's like a stationary skateboard, but it's set up in a way that you can move on it and stand on and balance on it. And there's lots of pads, right?
Yeah. It's not put together yet at the museum. It's partially set up. But yes, mm-hmm. It's board set up on what's basically a balance beam.
Okay.
And you then can stand on the boards and sort of figure out how you balance your weight evenly so you wouldn't fall off the board.
Very cool. I can tell you want to try it, Rebecca.
I do. You know, I mean, that just doesn't sound like an accident waiting to happen to me at all. But it does explain. It's a simple machine, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what it's trying to explain, that if you get it perfectly, if you hit the sweet spot on the simple machine, on the fulcrum, then you won't fall off in theory. I would definitely fall off.
But in theory.
In theory.
And that's what this
is
all about.
It's
science.
Yeah,
and theories of
science. Yeah.
Which it's great that Purdue is sponsoring this. I mean, I think that's really cool that they're, you know, sort of recognizing the importance of, you know, teaching science in this type of an environment and with this type of engagement.
Exactly. And I think that it also gives them, as Tracy said, they've done a lot of research on the neurotrauma of concussions. So mm-hmm. They are studying that in all different types of sports. So it kind of gives them a little bit of a platform to talk about that in this instance as well. But also to appeal to all of those Purdue University fans all over the state.
Yeah. So,
that are skateboarders
as well.
And there
are a lot of them, and skateboarders, yeah.
Now, are you guys, you mentioned, I mean, classes will be coming in. Obviously, you know, regular museum goers, there'll be a lot of people out there for the September 12th day when the skate park is out in front of the museum. Are you guys reaching out to skaters particularly? How are you guys doing that?
Yeah, it's actually been, it's almost like a grassroots effort. Mm-hmm. So the skate community, though, has really embraced the exhibit and September 12th in particular. So we've worked with a lot of different skaters throughout the city and connected with them on different levels. And so we're really excited to be working with them and to understand their movement as well, because there are some advocates within Indianapolis who really want to make skateboarding, they want to take the villainization of it away.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And to show that it is a sport and that it's not just for kids who are trying to make trouble, but mm-hmm. who are kids who are looking for something to do. So they want those kids or adults, whatever, what have you, to have a place to skate within the city. So it kind of, this exhibit has come along at a good time and aligned with their mission as well. I think it's Indie Skate Advocates is what they're, what they're called. And I might be getting that name wrong, but we're really excited to be working with the skate community in Indianapolis.
Awesome. Awesome. Anything you want to add?
Come visit. Come September 12th. You'll have fun. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like it is just going to be really fun. I mean, when I first heard that you guys were having this exhibit, I thought, that seems really cool. And kind of, you know, pushing the boundaries, limits of some, you know, of what you think is going to be at the State Museum. And I wish you both the best of luck with it. And
thank you.
Yeah, Tracy, Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on Are the Matter today. And looking forward to checking out the skate park on the 12th.
Thanks for having us.
And no skating inside the museum.
No skating inside.
Okay.
Travis DiNicola with the Indiana State Museum's Tracy Cromwell, Director of Collections, and Rebecca Smith, Director of Education. The exhibit Rad Science Skate Park Physics opens on the 5th, and on September 12th, you can go visit a full skate park course on the front lawn of the museum. Again, that's on September 12th only for the full skate park course, but the exhibit itself opens on the 5th. For more information, visit indianamuseum.org. Again, skate on over to indianamuseum.org. Step right up, get your deep fried fringe. Oh, wait a minute.
Ow.
I think I might have confused two things that start with an F, but we're going to talk about
them both.
So
much going
on our calendar recall.
What do we do? Yeah. Oh, man. If only the fringe would sell corn dogs.
Ooh.
Anyway, yeah, we've got the fair going on, the fringe going on. There's a lot, there's no reason just not to be out doing stuff
exactly
this week.
Exactly right. And I'll tell you, one of the places there is so much going on is all along Mass Ave and sort of the downtown and midtown cultural district area, because not only if you think fringe and you think about sitting in a darkened theater and watching a show that's a little bit under an hour and not very many bucks, mm-hmm. and maybe by a performer from out of town, don't forget there's all kinds of street performances, street art going on during the fringe, plus the beer tent where people gather.
Absolutely.
Between shows, mm-hmm. and a lot of popular retail spaces where people can pop in and do a little fun stuff
going on Mass Ave.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I've picked a couple shows to highlight.
All right,
okay, and 384 shows during all Fringe, not completely different. Each show has six performances, but still there's a lot of shows, so I can't highlight them all, but a couple I wanted to pick out. Stuart Huff, Road Stories, he's at Comedy Sports. Really funny guy, sort of kind of autobiographical storytelling. His shows have sold out the past couple of years. Really great, worth checking out. At Theater on the Square, one of the groups that is absolutely my favorite, the Fourth Wall presents Fruit Flies Like a Banana. these great three young classical musicians who are also amazing comedians and talented performers on stage and dancers, and their whole show is sort of random and different elements that make up a great show, but really just talented kids, they're in their 20s. But it's a show that I could go see over and over and over again. Definitely worth checking out. Really curious to see A Little Business at the Big Top. This is David Gaines, who's been here in the past, doing his one-man Seven Samurai show. This time it's a one-man circus show, sort of a little bit like Charlie Chaplin on the stage, kind of like very, not like clowning exactly, mm-hmm. but more sort of mime and some really interesting stuff. Great physical storyteller with his body. And then if you're looking for a great magic, there's actually two great magic shows, Oscar Munoz and Hannibal. They're both at the Indy 11 Theater. These guys were part of the Winter Magic Fest last year. They're both incredible magicians. Hannibal is this amazing storyteller. Oscar is just a lot of fun, and definitely worth checking out. And they're at the Indy 11 Theater. So those are some of my picks for the week.
Well, I want to add a couple of corollaries to that. Speaking of people named Hannibal, Silence is a musical send-up Silence of the Lambs, which is the Phoenix Theater's offering during our fringe period, and it's dark and twisty and silly and crazy. Well, I mean, okay, if you know any of the Silence of the Lambs films,
mm-hmm.
imagine putting music to that, and you kind of have the picture. Also, Jill Weiss, an actress from San Francisco, is doing a one-woman show called Tipped and Tipsy, which is on the stage at Theater on the Square. One-woman show all about the multiple perspectives around a tavern. Whether you've been behind the bar, on a stool, or under a table, this one-woman show is written for you. You'll get a taste of the regulars, and you might order the usual, but tonight things are going to change, and she really has an amazing ability to transform herself from one person to the next and keep track of who all the characters are, and you know exactly who she is out there in the audience. So lots and lots to do if you go to Indie Fringe, that's Fringe, not French, folks,
IndieFringe.org. You can plot your calendar out and figure out how to take the best advantage of all the Fringe shows.
That's right. That's right. And get your tickets early.
Get your tickets early.
The shows are selling
out. And do not go late because they won't let you in.
They won't let you in if you show up late.
Fair is fair.
There you go.
And now back to that deep fried thing.
Yeah.
Indiana State Fair.
Oh, that's going on still.
More time to take advantage of it. Just a couple more days, depending on when you're hearing us.
Mm-hmm.
There are arts things to do at the fair. Don't forget to visit the Home and Family Arts Building, which has all sorts of adjudicated categories from sewing, knitting, quilting,
paintings,
photography, some really fine artwork there. Of course, there's the art of food, not all of which is fried.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
mm-hmm.
the signature fair food this year, for the first time in many years, is not fried. It's the smoked pig. It's a ground pork hamburger.
Excellent.
And it's yummy.
I've heard there's a
not
lot.
Not that I've tried it.
No. Well, good. So fair and fringe, but you know, there's still so much other stuff going on. In fact, you know, a lot of people have been wondering, what's all this stuff going on the circle? And
yes.
Well, that's the Spark the Monument Circle. It's the sort of ongoing collaborative with Big Car, the Arts Collaborative, and the city, and they're basically doing things to activate the circle on a daily basis now until, sometime in September, October, something like that. But some cool things going on this week on Friday, Photo Friday. Stuart Hyatt, who's a great artist, his mobile cassette motorbike is going to be there at noon, and then there's going to be some musicians from Classical Music Indie who are going to be playing around noon as well, and other musicians throughout the day, and then including some folk music in the evening, and then Social Saturday with a workout with the YMCA at 11 and Forensic Friends drawing from noon to 12 and a parade of babies. That's right. Babies with best smiles will be parading in their decorated strollers on Saturday.
Happy
and,
babies.
And then
no,
all sorts of
happy
games on Sunday. All sorts of fun stuff going on the circle.
And you're
going to, well.
At some point, see a bunch of WFYI folks on the circle, including possibly the Art of the Matter. Sorry, bobblehead free, but there might be something special involving microphones. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned because that's still being developed. Hey, so you heard about this recently in Travis's fascinating interview with the Indianapolis Opera folks. But don't forget, this weekend, it's The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. You can find out more at IndieOpera.org.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Very cool. Hey, I want to talk about this more in coming weeks, but I just heard about a thing that IMOC is doing called Finders Keepers Geocaching Art Scavenger Hunt, where artworks, small artworks, miniature artworks have been hidden throughout Fountain Square by different artists, and you can find them using GPS coordinates. More information on indiemocha.org. I can't wait to learn exactly what that means, Sharon. But if you want to go searching for other things to do, you can always check out local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next week on that calendar of the week all.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar is bringing master performers from around the world to Indianapolis this year. John Alvarado joined Sharon Gamble in our studio for this preview.
So how many years is this for this concert series?
For the concert series, you know, that's a good question. The Society's been around since this is our 10th year. I believe we officially started having a guest artist series about our third year.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be about the seventh year of the visiting artist series. Yeah.
Were you around at the founding? Were you part of?
Were you
the founder?
I was one of the founders.
Okay.
Yeah, I was one of. I was there at that first meeting of classical guitarists trying to get something started here.
So, you know, it's a small world, and if you do something as specific as classical guitar, you probably think you know all the other classical guitarists, but have you been surprised at all at, like, when you were first kind of doing a census, how many of you there were?
No, not so much. In fact, that was actually one of the reasons why we started, because we actually were aware of who the classical guitarists were in Indianapolis, but there was just no real sense of community amongst the classical guitarists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the University of Indianapolis was doing its thing down there. Butler was doing its thing. IUPUI was, but there was no real kind of central feel of, you know, this is the community of classical guitar in Indianapolis. There wasn't even really any guest artists coming. I think the previous to our beginning, I think the last major artist that had been here in Indianapolis was Manuel Barueco performing with the ISO in the 90s. So it had been quite a while.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, now, wait a minute. My memory's not good enough to tell you when Sharon Isbin was here with the ISO. It might have been in the 90s, never mind.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of her thing is the concertos these days. Yeah. That's kind of a big part of what she does these days. Yeah. But yeah.
So how many professional classical guitarists live here?
Well, you know, let's see. There's myself. There's Nemanja Ostojic is down at the University of Indianapolis. Brett Terrell at Butler University. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Tom Fowler, who's the owner and operator of Noblesville Music Center, is also a professional classical guitarist. Sammy Lawson. Marion College, or I'm sorry, Marion University. Mm-hmm. I still can't get that right.
Everybody does that.
I know, yeah. I'm blanking on the gentleman's name there right now. I'm sorry to say. But so there's a good number of professionals.
That's a good size roster.
Yeah, yeah, people who are making a living at this. And then, of course, a lot of people who are hobbyists and doing it as well. So there are quite a few of us around here.
So the society gives a sort of a central gathering place to at least a digital one, but then this concert series gives people a chance to see each other and say, see, this is what I do, bring their friends along. And I love that this is a little bit of a tradition now that the first concert of the season is locals, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's something we started about 4 years ago, I believe it was, because one of the missions of the Guitar Society was not just to promote classical guitar and bring in a concert series, but also was to give local players a place to play. And we do that with open stages and workshops and things, but we wanted a little something more formal. So we started doing this, kicking off our season with a concert that really just featured players from Indianapolis and the surrounding area, and it gives them all a chance to kind of get up on stage. And it doubles also as a fundraiser for our series. The proceeds from that kickoff concert underwrite the rest of the season, the rest of the season as well. Yeah. So it's a real nice kind of community way to start the year.
What are you performing on that concert?
You know, I am doing a trio with two other performers here, two arrangements of some pieces by Chick Corea. And then, so that'd be pretty nice. They were actually arranged by Brett Terrell from Butler University. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be doing an arrangement of one of the Spanish dances by Enrique Granados.
Wow.
So I'm going to do that trio. And then I'm also going to do a solo set of flamenco repertoire as well.
Wow, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, it'll be a fun concert.
And that concert's coming up on September 10th, the kickoff to the fall art season. Everybody, if you can't find something to do that week, you're not looking very hard. And then you continue, and you're going to have to help me with the name of the Thai guitarist who's coming October 15th.
Yeah, it's Ekachai Jarakul.
Ekachai Jarakul. Mm-hmm. Jarakul.
Yeah.
The Asian classical guitar scene is not as well known as it probably should be here?
No, it's absolutely not. And in fact, he's the first Asian guitarist to win the Guitar Foundation of America competition, which is probably one of the largest and most prestigious classical guitar competition in the world. The previous 3 years were won by guitarists from Russia. The previous 3 years to that were all winners from France. So this is kind of a break in that tradition for a while to bring a guitarist from Thailand to do it.
Sure.
So it's really fantastic.
And he's only 28, and he's been first place winner in more than 15 international competitions.
Yeah, that's a pretty packed resume there.
I think that's a pretty talented young person. Yeah. So when you when you invite your performers, are you looking for particular repertoire, or are you looking for more of a balance? I mean, do you know their repertoire, or do you just say, we want you to come, you choose your rep?
Well, it's a little of column A, a little column B, I think.
Okay.
I kind of know a little bit of what traditionally the players tend to focus on.
Sure.
So we try to balance the program a little bit. But we never dictate to artists what we want them to perform.
Mm-hmm.
We really leave it up to them. But we do consider, you know, what they're known for as we're putting the season together.
Mm-hmm.
Although we do always, another tradition we have is we do always host the GFA competition winner. Part of the prize package for the GFA winner is they get the Guitar Foundation of America underwrites a 50-date concert tour of North America for them. Well, actually, it used to be just North America, but it's expanded a little bit beyond that in the last few years. So that's one player we almost always bring in, and it's always a real highlight of the season because they're always fantastic players.
Yeah, no kidding. And we're going from Thailand to France with the November concert. Tell us about this lady.
Yeah, Yeah, Gael Salal, this is my white whale, Sharon. We have tried, about 3 years ago, we tried to have her here, and we just couldn't make the dates work.
Wow.
2 years ago, we tried it again. We almost had it, and then some things fell through. Last year, she was on the season. We were all set to go in about 2 weeks. Due to circumstances beyond either of our control, we had to cancel the concert.
Oh, my gosh.
So now I'm just determined to get her. So we were able to work it out to
no
try to
floods,
get her.
Yeah. Please. No bad weather.
Yeah, well, yeah. And so last year, she couldn't make it. And then we brought in a great guitarist from Australia. And it was during one of those big snowstorms we had last
right.
year.
Right.
And I think it took him, if I recall correctly, 72 hours to get from New York City to here.
What patience and forbearance.
Yeah,
that's
poor guy.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then he played a fantastic concert there too. Yeah.
So it all worked out okay, but you're going to get Gail here
now we're
this
getting
year,
her.
This
yeah.
November.
And if I have to go to France and bring her here myself, I will get her. We're going to make it work.
You've all been warned.
Yeah.
At 14, she won 3 gold medals.
Mm-hmm.
And so just... somebody who set out early, who knew her path early, it sounds like.
Yeah, and she is a fantastic entertainer as well. You know, I know sometimes, for whatever reason, sometimes classical music gets a little bit of a negative stereotype as being kind of stuffy or too serious, but Gael is not that at all. She's a really great stage performer. She's got a great charisma with the audience. She's really just, in addition to being an amazing musician and technical virtuoso, she's also just a great communicator as well with the audience. If you watch her videos on YouTube or on her website,
I went to her website and yeah. it's unusual because it's it assumes that you're going there for video first and just essays, you know, biography about her second. So it's all like populated with videos, which was so fun. You're featuring somebody who's a little bit closer to home, who's actually studied at IU for your January concert.
Yeah, one of the things we try to always, since we are the Indianapolis Society of Classical Guitar, we try to always feature at least one concert from somebody from who has Indiana ties.
Mm-hmm.
And so Daniel Quinn is one of the ones that we're bringing this year. And fortunately, it's very easy to find great players in Indianapolis because of all the great guitar programs that come out of here. And Daniel's one we've been kind of talking to him for the last couple of years about trying to get him on here, so we're really glad to do it. His repertoire is really interesting. His dissertation was on the contemporary music of Japanese composers. So again, the guitar a lot of times gets pigeonholed as the repertoire of Spain and Latin America and things
sure.
like that, although there's a world of other great repertoire out there, and one that we don't get to hear a lot of is the music of Japan, and especially contemporary music of Japan. So hearing him play is always really kind of a great experience because you get to hear repertoire that you wouldn't normally get a chance to hear in a lot of concerts.
Sure. Mm-hmm. The guitar got carried. Well, I guess we have to think about there were instruments that were guitar-like created independently at the same time in different cultures. But the guitar got carried from the places, as you just said, we normally think of them throughout most of the world, all of the world?
I would say all the world at this point.
Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty ubiquitous around the world at this point. There's fantastic guitar players in Africa, Asia, Europe. Yeah, just pretty much all over the world at this point.
Cool. Yeah. Including Bosnia and Herzegovina, where our last performer hails.
Yeah.
Again, a little help with the name.
It's Denis Azabagic.
Azabagic.
Mm-hmm. And he's actually, it's kind of going to take us back to the beginning of the season, is Denis actually was the winner of the GFA competition back in the 90s. Back when I was in grad school, I remember seeing him perform on his GFA tour, actually, and met him in Arizona. When I was a student out there, and he's another really phenomenal player, and he won his first competition. I think he was 20. It was in Madrid, and he pretty much went on to win every competition he played in after that. And became so experienced at competitions, he went on to actually write a book that's pretty well known amongst competing guitarists about preparing for competition play.
Oh,
and things
really?
Like that. Yeah. He actually lives in Chicago, so it was pretty easy for us to make that connection at this point. And we had a little bit of a connection in that he was the former teacher of another great guitarist from Indianapolis that you may or may not have heard of. No, I'm sorry. She's not from Indianapolis. She's from Lafayette. Chagón Clavaranga, who is currently in a university. She's in Cleveland studying with Jason Villon now, but she's a great young player. She was and a good friend of the Guitar Society. She used to study with Denis, and so we kind of spoke with them about, you know, what do you think about having him here? And they said you should talk to him. So we did, and he was great to come down here.
There's some lineage there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, guitarist, you know, you hear about 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
So guitarist is more like 3. So, yeah.
two strings of separation or something like that. You're hearing a lot in our conversation about competitions, and if you're a young student, don't worry, you don't have to compete. You could be a great player without competing.
Absolutely.
It's just that it makes for great marketing copy for certain, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it makes it's exactly what you just said there.
And how did you get lured to the guitar? Was that your first instrument, or did you start somewhere else?
No. Guitar is the only instrument I ever wanted to play.
How did you learn about guitar?
Well, because it's scientifically proven to be the greatest instrument in the world, Sharon.
And your parents told you this when you were a wee one.
That's right. No, my father was a guitarist, actually, and my grandfather was a guitarist.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was just kind of always there, and it was just something that I always really felt drawn to. When my father wasn't there, my brother and I would pick up his guitar and pretend we were playing to one another and just kind of pluck around on it. And finally they decided if I was going to mess with his guitar, they may as well get me lessons. So I started from there, yeah.
How old were you?
I think I started formally taking lessons around 12. My father was teaching me before that. He was a bit of a folky, so he was showing me, you know, chord progressions, learning to play Peter Paul and Mary and Bob Dylan songs.
Good.
And then I just at some point they decided to give me more formal training, so I started taking lessons privately.
And you were sounds like old enough to kind of wrap your mind around the fact that some discipline on your part was going to be required.
Yeah, and it was never really an issue. They never had to tell me to practice. It was something I always wanted to do. In fact, they experimented for a while as a punishment of taking guitar away from me. So they never really had to convince me to practice. It was just something I wanted to do.
I hope your wife isn't listening.
Yeah.
She would never do that, would she?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Sharon Gamble with the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar's John Alvarado. All concerts are open to the public and held on the IUPUI campus. You can find out much more at indianaguitar.org. Again, indianaguitar.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll get a preview of the Arabian Nights being performed at North Central High School.
How exotic. I'll find out about this year's Start with Art and its keynote speaker, Eric Booth, a great arts educator.
Excellent. And I'll take a look at the Actors Theater of Indiana's production of The Fantastics. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.